I guess it's fair to tell you who I am in case you haven't gathered. I'm Willis Choate. We run a weekly newspaper in Marietta, Oklahoma. Now, we spell it not W-E-A-K, okay? Our newspaper is W-E-E-K, not W-E-A-K. Now, if you can imagine anything worse than being a newspaper operator, owner, and writer in a town of 2,500, I want you to tell me what it is. You see, every time we write a story, we know pretty well personally the people we're writing about. That includes the times they get arrested, the times that their children are born, the times that they're married, and sometimes multiple times they're married, and all of these things. Now, if you know anything about a small town, you know that in almost any small town there are people who like to find fault with things. So we put in two or three misspelled words a week just so they'll be happy too, because we try to serve everybody. But I'm sure your local paper does that too. So much for that. Okay, what we're going to talk about today are... Yeah, small towns are like a church, right. We don't want to get off on that, do we? My wife is with me, of course. She also works in the business. My mother, who is over 75 years of age, is also in our business. Our family, you know anything about small towns? Our family has been in Marietta and in the same business since 1897. Now, we feel like that if we can stay five more years, we'll be accepted as a local. Okay, let's talk about goals, priorities, and use of time. I was looking back at my notes to when I originally was involved in this particular workshop. And let me say two or three things. Number one is, they normally, when we started out doing workshops, they normally give you the thing that you're the worst at to do a workshop on. And I was terribly disorganized, had no real sense of direction, in a sense. And I was asked if I would go on a conference to do a workshop. And quite frankly, it was a big ego deal, because I admired the people who asked me. And they were people that I had looked up to, and they were sort of my spiritual heroes. And I forgot to do one thing. I said yes before I asked what it was they wanted me to do. And Gene called me back and he said, "By the way, Willis, I think goals, priorities, and use of time would be something that would be beneficial for you to do for yourself, and out of it, maybe somebody else can learn something." So that's how I got off on this, and it was 1985. Okay, let's talk about this process of goals, priorities, and use of time, and I want you to think of it as building blocks. First of all, we must set goals. Then we set priority on our activities, what activities we're going to do, so that we can reach those goals. And then we allocate our time based on our priority. I was thinking this week earlier about another spiritual message, and I don't want to get into that. But I was thinking about the process that we go through in making decisions. And one of the problems with the world today is that the filter through which we pass our decision-making process is not always the proper filter. Well, in the same sense, many of the things that we do and how we allocate our time is not based on the right set of filters. So in this workshop, in a sense, what we're going to try to do is try to set the parameters on which we make decisions that affect our lives. Okay, getting control of our lives, our life is basically a three-step process. First of all, we must determine our goals in life. Secondly, then, we must set priority to reach those goals. And third, we will allocate our time based on those priorities. That has to do with scheduling. Incidentally, later, if we have time, I want to tell you a story about a businessman who gave a fellow $25,000 in a fee for which he wasn't obligated to pay. This happened for a tip on how to do something having to do with goals, priorities, and use of time. I have researched this, and apparently this happened about 50 years ago. Now, if somebody had an idea that 50 years ago was worth $25,000, and the idea and the payment was made voluntarily, I think it might be worth sharing. We'll do that later. Let's look first. The other thing that I have been doing lately, as far as my spiritual is, walk, is that I have been looking at the life of Paul very closely. I'm at that point in my life when I am beginning to look toward the end. And frankly, I want to finish well. And I have become very concerned about that because many Christians don't finish well. And as a part of that, I have been doing a study on the life of Paul. I don't want to get into that, but I want to look at the beginning, at what I think Paul finished well. I want to take a minute for us to look at 1 Corinthians 9:24 through 27. And let's look at what Paul says about the way he was running his life. And we'll play a little fill in the blank. Verse 24, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. And everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air. But I buffet my body and make it my slave, lest possibly, after I have preached to others, I myself should be disqualified." Now, let's look at that and break it down verse by verse, and let's look at what he's talking about, a philosophy of how he lives his life, Paul. He says, "I run in such a way that I may win." He says, "I exercise self-control over all things." And then he says, in verse 26, "Therefore, I run in such a way as not without aim." Very important. And then in verse 27, he says, "But I buffet my body." Now, in the original language, buffet literally meant I beat it black and blue to bring it into submission. I buffet my body. I bring my body, my whole faculty, into control. Now, I want to say quickly, the last part of that says, "lest I myself be disqualified." That has nothing to do with salvation. It has to do with failing to reach his goal. Now, the first hurdle for most of us is to decide who we're going to live our life for. Who are we going to be, man-pleasers? Or are we going to be God-pleasers? It is the audience for whom we live our life. And I think that's very important. I know people who spend their entire life trying to please other people. And frankly, in my business, personally, I've come to the point, because you guys know I'm bound to be in a controversial business. And I have people who just flat don't like me, much less understand me or try to. And I have come to the point, and it's really come in the last 5 years, that I am far more concerned about what God knows than about what people think. And one of the problems today with many people, and I think it's particularly true of young adults, they live their lives to please somebody else. We must decide, are we going to be man-pleasers or are we going to be God-pleasers? Okay, let's talk about goals. Now, a goal is what you really want out of life. An example. One father of teenage kids said that he would spend the rest of his life with his kids, with whom he had never spent enough time. What had happened was he came to the point that he realized he didn't have much time left. He had a terminal disease. They were asked a series of questions. Well, what would you do? He said, I have never spent enough time with my children. I will spend the rest of my time with my children. What is a goal? A goal is a terminal point in a race, an end toward which effort is directed. Now, it's very interesting to me that many of us live our lives without a real plan. Now, most of you will have a career plan. I'm not knocking that. That's where most of us do our planning. But there are some secrets to getting this thing in perspective. Bill Glass and James McEachran wrote a book, Plan to Win. And they used a technique which is called picturing. They wrote in the book that the mind thinks in pictures, and that we should determine what our goals are and picture ourselves reaching that goal. And if we do that, our success rate will be far higher. Now, for the Christian, believing is seeing. To the world, seeing is believing. Now let's talk just for a minute about this objective of goals. All of you have seen the 100-yard dash run at a track meet. Have you ever seen anyone bust out of the blocks in the 100-yard dash and take three steps and stop and look for the finish line? Now that's ludicrous, isn't it? But most of us live our lives that way. We burst out of the blocks, and then somewhere in mid-course, we decide to finish. What is it that we really want? What is our goal? Well, goals should be both general and specific. Let me give you an example. A jogger may jog for the general goal of good health. Now, some of you guys who are more interested than some of the rest of us, in maintaining your physical fitness. You jog and your general goal is good health. But your specific goal is probably, could be 2 miles a day or 10 miles a week or whatever it is. The goal must be general, but it must be specific. Okay, how do we get started in this process? Well, first of all, we must determine what it is we really want out of life. And I don't think it's an easy question. I think it's one that takes serious thought. Our goals and our objectives always determine the outcome. The trouble is that if you don't know where you're going, almost any road will get you there. And that's the way many of us live our lives. In April of 1985, I was driving down the interstate to catch a plane out of DFW to fly to Anaheim, California. On the radio at 6 o'clock in the morning, I hear Denny McLean. Now, some of you older guys know who Denny McLean was. He was a Cy Young Award-winning pitcher in the professional baseball. That morning, Denny McLean, the day before, had been convicted of federal drug and racketeering charges. He had been sentenced the previous day to 23 years in the federal prison. And he made a statement, and I heard it on tape, in fact on KRLD, that has never left me. He says, I don't know how you get to where I am today from where I was 17 years ago. 17 years prior to that, he had been at the pinnacle. He had been every young man's ideal. And 17 years later, he is in the pit. because he is facing 23 years in the federal penitentiary. Again, what did he say? He said, I don't know how you get to where I am today from where I was 17 years ago. The problem was that when he got out of baseball, he lost his goal, his objective in life. Okay, let's talk about goals. Incidentally, you might want to listen up about this area because I'm going to ask you to write at the end of this to write some goals. That usually piques people's attention. I will not ask you to stand up and recite them. Okay, the goals that we have generally are on four levels having to do with time frame. What are the kinds of goals? Well, there is the overall life goal. There would be we would consider to be a long-range goal. Now, long-range to me would be 5 to 10 years. There are intermediate goals. That would be 1 year to 5 years. And then there's the short term. Now, just for simplicity, let me share with you mine. My overall life goal, let me read it to you. To continually be striving to conform my life to the earthly example of Jesus, making a significant difference in the lives of those people with whom God allows me to come in contact. That's my life goal. That's what it was. That's what I wrote in 1985. And I look at it on a regular basis to be sure I'm still going that direction. Let me read it to you again. To continually be striving to conform my life to the earthly example of Jesus, making a significant difference in the lives of those people with whom God allows me to come in contact. Okay. That's a life goal. Long-range goal. To help develop laymen that are capable of sustaining the ministry in tough times. By that I mean, in a hostile environment. By that I mean, if you could take a guy that you could take and lift out of America and drop him in the middle of the jungle, and he could sustain himself spiritually and multiply. Because he could feed on the Word of God that he had stored up in his heart. He would have the ability to maintain spiritual momentum even in a hostile environment. That's a goal. My intermediate goal is to identify and invest time in men who are capable of impacting their sphere of influence. You all understand what I'm saying? Bug, I appreciate you nodded right after she hit him in the ribs. Let me read it again. To identify and invest time in men who are capable of impacting their sphere of influence. Incidentally, I have rewritten that particular goal 4 times. As time goes by, I change the short run. Okay, what is my immediate goal? Our short range goal, that is for this year. My wife and I decided last September that we would become involved in our local church in a different way, trying, and we're asked to revitalize the young couples ministry in our church. Our short-range goal, spiritual goal, for this year is to help be a part of revitalizing the couples ministry in our church with young couples. I happen to be in a growing church where there are a lot of young couples and a lot of potential. Now, how we're doing that is we're through a series of things. First of all, we're establishing relationships. I'll give you this example just to show the follow-through. We're establishing relationships. We're in opening exercises in the young couples department, giving each of them an opportunity to give their personal testimony. The way that works is we started out by giving our testimony. Then one Sunday we took 7 minutes and outlined how you give your testimony. And then we began to ask people, and we bring in some older people from outside the church because we feel like that the church needs some history teachers. And they need to know the history of the church. So we bring in some older Christians to talk about what their life was like before and how they came to Christ and what it's been like after. And then we are training these young people, these young couples, giving them the opportunity to give their testimonies. And the way we do this, we ask them, and then we try to go out to lunch with them on Monday or Tuesday and let them give it to us before they give it to the Sunday school department on Sunday morning. Very simple. We also do some memory in there, and we also do Bible reading. We've talked about the other basics of Christian life. But it's just another way for us to reach our spiritual goal short term, and that is to be of impact, have some impact in that department. Okay. Instead, would you like to hear what Gene Ward's spiritual goal is? I think I have it here. Let's see. Yes, his life goal: to know, love, and glorify God, and to be used of Him to raise up qualified laborers in significant numbers as fast as possible to help fulfill the Great Commission. Now, doesn't that sound like Gene? Yeah, that's his goal. Okay, let's talk about the areas in which we need to set goals. I will do this very quickly so we can move on to some other things, but very quickly. The areas in which we need to set goals. Now, I talked before about spiritual, but there are five areas. One is in the personal. Now, you want to be sure that you set goals that are worthy of you. Set your goals high enough that they'll be a challenge. For example, a personal goal, and these are not really all that solid, but one of them would be to become more disciplined. That's one of the things that I have fought my entire life, is being disciplined. A personal goal for me, a good goal would be to lose some weight. For some people, it might be quitting smoking. Some people might be stopping dipping snuff. Whatever it is, you've got this habit that you need, that would be a personal goal. A family goal. With small children, it would be to teach them to, for example, a family goal would be with small children to teach them to be caring, sharing, praying, and appreciating the Word of God would be something you could teach them. In the area of the family, you want to remember it is not the quantity but the quality of time. One other thing about kids. I read a book some time back. It's old now, called The 1 Minute Manager. And I have thought a lot about the chief principle in the thing. And the chief principle of that book is, as far as I was concerned, to catch them doing something right. I have thought about how much time we spend in our businesses and with our kids catching them doing something wrong. I think we ought to spend more time catching people doing something right and giving them a word of encouragement. I happen to know a couple of guys who are very good at that. I happen to know a whole covey of people who are very poor at that. Because it's just the way we're motivated. But I think we ought to spend time with our kids catching them doing something right and encouraging them. Ministry would be another area where you would need goals. For example, reaching your neighbor for Christ, or leading a Bible study, or making a 10 most wanted list, or reading through the Bible in a year. Job and career, I won't even touch because you guys understand that one. Recreation. I know that may sound like that's strange, that you need to, that recreation would be an area in which you need to have goals. But let me give you a personal example. My father died when I was 13 years old. And the years prior to his death had not always been pleasant for me. I'm an only child. I'm the only child of an only child of an only child. We don't have a very big family. When I was about 12 years of age, my mother and dad and I went out on the creek in Lake Texoma. It was one of the few times that I can recall our family being together in what I would call quality time. We went out on the creek. My dad took a grate out of an oven, an old oven grate, and he took two or three rocks. He dug a pit and he put wood in it. He took two or three rocks and put on each side. He lit the fire And he put that grate down on it. My mother took a cast iron skillet. Now, you guys probably don't know what a cast iron... It's really back home, it's a cast iron skillet. An old black cast iron skillet. My mother put that on that fire, and she cooked bacon. And then she took the grease out of the bacon, and she scrambled eggs. Now, I can even remember what was in the eggs because she chopped up green onion and put cheese in it. Now, interestingly, that thing didn't cost much. But that is my only real memory of my family being together and there being peace. My dad died a year later. I use that example of my own life to point out to you that it is not the big things. It's not Six Flags. It's not Disneyland. It's the time that you take to have recreation with your kids when it's one-on-one and they're the center. This also works with your wife or your husband. How long has it been since you have made them priority? Yes, you do need recreational goals too. And like I said, it's not the big things. One other quick personal example. The other day we were riding, I was thinking about this, making memories. I can't sing a lick. My wife can't sing a lick either. We were driving down the interstate the other day with a praise tape in the tape recorder, our two-year-old granddaughter sitting in the center, and all three of us were singing praise songs. Now, our two-year-old doesn't sing very well, but neither does Grandma and Grandpa. But I thought to myself, that could be a quality minute for her. You know, it's the little thing. Okay, enough of that. What does the Word say? Matthew 22:37-38. And he said to him, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all of your mind. This is the greatest and foremost commandment. Look and tell me, Jim, what the time frame is that I need to be working toward. Okay, let's talk about the value of written goals. Why would we want to have written goals? Number one is they keep you on course. I don't know about you guys, but I stray quickly. And we use a computer. I use a computer to write certain goals. And so written goals keep us on course. Number two is they provide a yardstick of progress. I think about the mile markers on the interstate. That's what they do. Number three is they crystallize thoughts and motivate us to action. Now, I don't know about you all, but I need clear thoughts occasionally. Sometimes mine get a little muddled. I think it's the pressure of the world we live in. Four, written goals serve as references and reminders of our objectives. I'm shocked every time I do this workshop because I have to go back and look at my goals again. I end up rewriting the short-range goals nearly every time. Five, a written plan conserves time and energy because we know at all times where you are and what you should be doing next. Six, we gain from life the exact reward we plan for and expect to get. First, we must make decisions to set goals. Okay. Let's move on now to priorities. Yes. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I get to doing that. I know better than that. I just don't do better. We gain from life the exact reward we plan for and expect to get. First, we must make a decision to set goals. We get it that time? Okay. Sorry about that. And then I just end that statement with, what do you want out of life? Priority. Priority, I just love Webster sometimes. I looked up sovereign not long ago because I can't spell sovereign, but I found it. And I looked up in the dictionary to see what sovereign meant. And Webster says, the act of being, I looked up sovereignty, and it said, the act of being sovereign. I looked up priority and it says prior, preceding, in order, or importance, what we put first, priority. The point is that we all set priorities every day. The problem is we often do it somewhat unconsciously. We just drift through life. Our decisions are seldom really related to our goals. We usually take the line of least resistance. We set priorities based on certain things, and often they're the wrong things. I don't know about here. I'm sure this is not true here. I know guys who have never been late for the kickoff of a high school football game, but can't get to Sunday school and church on time. Now that is a matter of priority, right? That's true. Yeah. Preach on. Priority basically governs the when in our lives. What time do I need to finish?
10:35.
Okay, we're in good shape. Well, we're going to make it. Okay. I'm going to skip through some material so I can give you all time to work on your goals, but I know you're looking forward to that. Goals without priority are meaningless. The value of having a goal is that we often put priority on the wrong things. Okay, now, what are the areas where we need to set priority? Now, the other day I had a fellow call me, and we were talking about priorities. And we went through the series about the goals, and then he said, well, I'm having a problem in my life. And his problem basically dealt with the order of importance of certain activities. Now, I'm not going to ask you to put them in order. But the battle normally comes in priority in the area of God, family, job, ministry, recreation. Okay? I cannot tell you what your order of priority should be, but I can tell you what I have come to the conclusion in my own life. I think my first priority ought to be my relationship with God. Okay? My second priority should be taking care of my family. Now, I'm going to meddle just a little bit, particularly some of you younger women. Often we see mothers who put their children before their father, before their husband. And all I ask you to do is look and see who God gave you first. The next priority I would place, and Jim may argue with this, I would say your relationship with God, your family, and then I would say your job. This is the place where we have a problem, where there's a difference of opinion. Next, I would say the ministry. The reason is that for a layman, he has to work to have the money to have a ministry.
Well, it's the reason ministers have trouble with that is because a minister is their job.
Yes. Okay. I don't want to touch that. He did a better job of that than I can do, okay? And it came from the right source. And I gave him $5 to do it. The last thing is recreation. Now, what I want to tell you is, and just sharing out of my own experience, I've seen a lot of guys who lost a great opportunity with a family and a ministry over putting recreation way up the ladder. The strongest, most effective soul winner in my community went over the hill over jogging. And he went from jogging to fishing. He is the most effective soul winner that I have known in my community. And he today, he probably hasn't won anybody to the Lord or shared his faith with anybody in 3 years. All because he got his priorities upside down. Okay, enough of that. One other thing, your priorities will change with age and maturity. That's okay. Don't worry about it. I have a friend who spent the first 25 years of his life making money. That was top priority. And one day, north of our town, his son was walking down a two-lane highway, walking right down the center median, and every time a car would come to him, he'd jump in front of it. All of a sudden, my friend realized, and it came too late, because the kid right now is a drug, he's not a kid, he's probably 35, 40 years old. He's in a drug rehab center last month in Phoenix. And what happened was my friend spent 20 years making money, and he made a lot of it. But in the process, he lost his wife, he lost two daughters, and he lost a son. See, he propped his ladder of success up against a wall that fell. Enough of that. Okay, remember that God is more interested in what you are than what you accomplish. And what you are is reflected or measured by relationships. Kindness, righteousness, lovingness, that's not a very good word, goodness, and our relationship with other people. That is what is the measure of our relationships. Christianity is basically a relationship with God, and the quality of that relationship is reflected in our relationship with other people. It's interesting that in our churches you very rarely find anybody who is at outs with someone when the person is walking with God on a daily basis. I'll let you think about that a minute. I very rarely find anybody in a church who is at outs or crossed or a problem in a church who is walking with God on a daily basis. It has to do with focus.
I'll put it one other way. You can tell how well a person is getting along with God by how they're getting along with other people. Same
principle. Same idea, yeah. Better said. Yeah. One other thing about churches, and this is free, you very rarely find a church that is in an upheaval if everyone has a genuine appreciation for the other's gifts. You see, a church functions well if everybody is walking with Jesus and they have a genuine appreciation of the other Christian's gifts. Incidentally, I happen to be in a church that has not had a fuss, a fight, or a disturbance in 10 years. Isn't that remarkable? And the latter is the reason I think that is true, is that we came to the point that we have a genuine appreciation for others, each other's gifts.
How did you reach that point?
Spiritual maturity. In our own situation.
I mean, in corporate church, how did you achieve that spiritual maturity? I mean, was it groups, activities, or what?
It's a rather long story, but the short version of the story is that at one point in time, our church had 80% of its membership in small groups. Now, frankly, I'm in a Southern Baptist church. That's very unique. And in this Southern Baptist church, I guess 80% of our people were in small groups. Now, they were on several different levels of commitment. But I think out of that, sharing and praying together, see, once you pray with somebody, your relationship with them is never the same. Once you sit and you hold hands in the middle of somebody's living room floor and you pray, your relationship with those people is never the same. And that was a part of the changing process. Our church, frankly, has gone away from small groups, but the spiritual maturity that was gained out of that still permeates that fellowship. It's been a lasting thing. I didn't mean to get off on that, but that's a fair question. And I'll talk to you later about it. I can give you the whole structure, but it is interesting. Okay, let's talk about the use of time. What is time? Well, let's look at it from the biblical perspective. It is created by God. It all comes from Him, and it is a gift. We only have that He allows us to have. We should value our time like gold. Let me tell you something. I don't know whether you guys have ever been involved in trying to get people to work on committees and stuff. I had rather raise money as raise time. In our little old town at home, if we've got a guy, we want him to give us $5,000 for an industrial prospect project, we'll go in and ask him to give us a week of his time. And he'll start humming around and say, and then we'll say, well, we could stand $5,000 for our industrial fund, and he'll give you the $5,000. Because he'd rather give you the $5,000 than give you a week of his time. It's just far easier to raise money than it is time. Because we live in a society where we have so many families have multiple breadwinners. And that causes such time pressure. I think God gave us time, and he expects us to be fruitful in using it. You need to watch where you invest your time. Well, how much time do you have? Well, everybody has just enough to do what it is that God wants us to do. If you can't get everything done that God wants you to do, you're either doing things the wrong way, or you're doing the right things the wrong way. Let me say it again. If you can't get everything done, you're either doing the wrong things or you're doing the right things the wrong way. One other factor about time, and it is that life is brief. Now, some facts about time. All of us are not created equal. That's a myth. We're not all created equal. The one thing we do have in common is we all have 24 hours in a day. Time is the one true common ground. We all have all the time we need to do God's will. That's interesting, isn't it? God will not call us to do anything he won't allow us to have the time to do. Life is brief, our days are numbered, and we don't know how many we have. Gene didn't do it today, but normally. He will talk about his age, he will whip out his book, and he has figured out his 40 and 10, and he will tell you how many days he has left. Unless God is gracious. And he lives his life like he only has, I think we're down to, I've forgotten what we're down to, but he lives his life like that's all it is. Now, that is living critically and putting a critical use on your time. Time not spent is lost. Time pressures generally are caused by being out of control, of losing control of a situation, or spending too little time planning. Most of us spend too little time planning. The other thing is that if you don't plan your time, somebody else will. And I have found that there are plenty of people who are tremendously generous with my time. Let's talk about some general principles of the wise use of time. Selectivity is an important part of this process. And now the problem is differentiating between what is urgent and what is important. Now, what I'm about to say is not in your handout, but you might want to think about it and think with me as I talk about it. There are two key words in prioritizing. Now, remember to back up. I said what we do is that we set goals and then we set priorities that allow us to reach those goals, the building block principle. So we're talking now about the allocation about priority and how to set priority. The two most important words are importance and urgency. Now, importance is related to your goals. Urgency is related to time. And it concerns how soon something must be done. If an activity is very important, and it is very urgent, it should be your number one priority. Let me give you a warning. The natural tendency is to pay too much attention to the urgent and not enough time to the important. We can spend all of our time doing what is urgent. I have had a week of that in my business. I have spent all of my time working on the urgent. And we never get around to what really is important. because of pressure. We never reach our goals unless we do what is important and not always just what is urgent. You see, if something is very urgent, but it is not important, we should give it low priority. But you understand what I just said? If something is very urgent, if it comes down to making decisions, and there is a great urgency in time, but the activity is not that important, it should have low priority. We ought to put priority on what is most important. That's the principle. Jill, I hate to do this in here, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. Before making a commitment of time, I want to give you a set of, I guess in the computer business, do you call it switches or filters, whatever, a thing trips through a decision-making process? What do you call them? Are they? Yeah, trips or switches or decisions. Let me give you a series of questions to ask. Before you make a commitment of your time, here are some questions you might want to ask. This also is not in your notes, as I recall. First of all, determine if it is a good idea. That is the first question you must answer before making a commitment of your time. Is it a good idea? Secondly, am I the person to do it? Third, how long will the opportunity last? Fourth, does it fit my goals? Now you notice I didn't say does it fit somebody else's goals. And last, does the Lord want me to do it? I'm trying to think of an absurd example. Let's say that they come to me and they ask me, tell me that our church very badly needs somebody to work in the baby department. Okay? Now, is it a good idea to have somebody come to the nursery? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, isn't it? Okay? Am I the person to do it? No way, Jose. See, that one took that one out quickly, didn't it? Okay, how about this opportunity? Frankly, we ran through this set of trips deciding whether or not to come down here today to do this conference. Let's go through it real quickly. Is it a good idea? When I was first approached with this, and first asked to think about this, we thought, now, is this a good idea? We based that on, for one thing, the nature and the character of the pastor here. The nature of the congregation as we knew it. And some of the key people that we knew who were involved in this church. Yes, it did appear to be a good idea. Gene came to me after he was approached with it, and he said, Willis, why don't you take this and why don't you look and see if you think the schedule is a doable deal. Now, I had to decide, because I knew whenever he brought that to me, I was about to make a 6 to 8 week commitment of some of my time. Well, am I the person to do it? And I had to say that. I said, yes, I am the person to do it, what Gene asked me to do, because I have an ongoing, long-term relationship with Noel Thunderbird. I know Tom Williams, and I have had some experience. How long will the opportunity last? The next question that I have asked. For me, I think we've got a short-term window of opportunity for a couple of reasons. So yes, I think that now is the time. Next question is, does it fit my goals? Did it fit my goals? I read them to you. Yeah, hand and glove, it fits my goals. Then I have to say, God, do you want me to do it? And the answer came back to me, not in the clouds, but I just never found a no. So I got an automatic yes until God shut the door. So we're here. That's how we tripped through that. I don't know if that's a real good example, but that's how we tripped through that opportunity. Okay, let's talk about being a finisher. One of the biggest problems we have is in life is that we don't finish well. And that is, again, is related to goals and priorities. Now, let me, just for a minute, and I'm going to just ad-lib this, but let me give you that $25,000 principle just on the outside chance about missing and run out of time. There was an efficiency expert whose name was Ivy Lee. He was an efficiency expert and a consultant. And he went in to see Charles Schwab, who at the time was the president of Bethlehem Steel. Now, folks, this has got to be a long time ago. Best I can determine, it was over 50 years. And what he did is he went in and he made this presentation about all that he could do for Charles Schwab. And when he finished, he said, with our services, you'll be able to manage better. And Schwab looked across the desk and said that that wasn't the problem. He said, what we need is not more knowing, but more doing. Not knowledge, but action. He said, if you will give us something that will pep us up, incidentally, I know that's old because that's an old word, pep up. Said, if you will give us something to pep us up, to do the things we already know we ought to do, I'll be glad to listen to you, and I will pay you anything you ask. Ivy Lee slid a piece of paper across the desk to him. And he said, write on this paper the 6 most important tasks you have to accomplish tomorrow. And he took a couple of minutes and let him do it. And I think that was a pretty gutty move, frankly, to slide a piece of paper across that big desk to Charles Schwab. But that's neither here nor there. He said, then put this piece of paper in your pocket. And the first thing in the morning, you take it out and you read it, and you determine which of those 6 things is top priority. He said, then you work on that one thing until you finish it. If you finish it, move on to number 2. If you finish 2, move on to number 3. If you don't get to 4, 5, and 6, don't worry about it, because without planning, you wouldn't have got there anyway. He said, now you take this, and you use, Ivy Lee told him to do this. He said, now you take this, and you use this for a month. And if it works for you, then you share it with the people in your company. And when you have finished, you can send me a check for whatever you think this idea was worth. It came open-ended, didn't it? He got a check for $25,000. No deal. Now, folks, I think that's worth it. Wow. And frankly, it's something I put into practice sometimes better than others. Now, I brought you a little card. You might not want to take and think about using this card. Because what it does, it fits in the pocket of your shirt or fits in your purse. You can write down your priorities and it has on it today's priorities. In the center it has the activity. And over on the left it says P number, that's priority number. 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever it is. And then a check over to the right to put down whenever you have finished it. I throw that out for free. The next principle on the wise use of time is learning to say no. Now, this is a message for those that are active in the church. Learning how to say no. I'll tell you the best way to say no is when you're asked to serve on a committee, you're asked to do something in the church, if you will use
the five things, the five trips, questions, if you would genuinely do that, and then if you feel no inclination to do it, if you just say no. Now, let me tell you how to say no and not get an argument. Incidentally, every time I have somebody tell me that they don't have time to do something, I know they're a liar. The problem is it just doesn't have priority. They have time. They just don't have, it just doesn't have priority. Now, whenever you're asked to do something and you feel that you must say no, here's how you do it. Now, you've got to do it honestly. Say, no, I don't believe it's God's will for my life. Now, would you tell me what the argument is against that? Quick, give me a couple. There aren't any. Right? Now, you've got to be truthful, or at least if you're not going to be truthful, check and be sure it's not a cloudy day. Okay. The other thing that I do is, and when I say no, I also sometimes follow that with it. It is not priority, top priority in my life. That's fair and that's honest. Okay? Another couple little quickies. One of the biggest problems we have with our use of our time is that we're not decisive. Now, there's some ways around that. One of them is, make a decision, and making a decision, get the facts, face the facts, plan ahead, think it through, make a decision, and do it now. A little quickie. Now, the other thing is that I think that we all need to learn is there are some areas in your life where you have a hard time making a decision. And what I have learned to do is I try to delegate the decision making in that area of our business to somebody who is more decisive than I am in that area. My wife and I are in this business together. There are some things that she is far more decisive about than I am. And I've just given her that area. I realize that's a shortcoming in me that I have a problem with. I just delegate it to her. She just makes the decisions in that area. Okay. One other thing that I want to share with you when we'll talk about how to plan. I believe that it's possible that the telephone is one of the greatest inventions we've ever had. It is also the biggest time robber. I happened to have the opportunity last month to do a little consultation with a fellow whose wife had a 16-hour long-distance bill last month.
How do you do that?
She worked at it. She has two small children. And she had a 16 hours of long-distance last month. But I would guarantee you that nothing she talked about had any real importance. Now, I have some good friends that I have telephone conversations with that are extremely brief. But the telephone can be a tremendous time robber. I also have a couple of friends who will only take calls in their business at a certain time, and they'll have someone take their calls, and then they have 15 minutes set aside that they return calls. One thing that I have learned is I think it's easy to get a telephone call returned by somebody who is tremendously well organized than there is anybody else. Well, enough of that. Very quickly, how do you plan? Well, you plan by appropriating God's wisdom. You pray to appropriate God's wisdom to your plan. Two, you establish goals. Determine what it is that you want to accomplish. Three, you program. That determines the how. Four is schedule. That's the when. And five is the budget, is budgeting your time. Now, what I would like for you to do today, just as a close, what do we have, 7 minutes? Is that what I have? Okay. What I would like for you to do is I would like for you to use the 5 of the next 7 minutes, and I would like for you to do the goal setting a little bit upside down. But I want you to begin to think about what your life's goal is. When I talk about the overall goal, which I think is on page... Yeah, on page 3 there's an example. There's a place over on the back on which you could write your life's goal. Okay, let's make it simpler for you. Why don't you just write what your ministry goal is for the coming year? What is your spiritual goal for the coming year?